Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations. This is part 2 of episode 12, which is a special episode from the Organizational Learning, Knowledge and Capabilities Conference at St. Andrews in Scotland this year in 2016. If you haven't listened to part 1, please go and do so now, as this is a direct continuation of that discussion that me and Ralph had with our two special guests, Professors Paul DeGute of University of California at Berkeley and Professor Emma Bell of Keele University. And now enjoy part 2.
So we talked a bit about why one should or maybe should not go to conferences. Do you remember your first experience of attending your first conference? What was it like to get there and then you have all these senior people and a lot of people you don't know? What did you do? How did you go about?
My path into them was slightly different, and all I can say is the simple answer is I embarrassed myself profoundly, and so maybe inhibited in how much I talk about it now, because I didn't, I'm afraid that the ghastly secret, which I shouldn't reveal probably, is that I didn't come up through academia, so I don't have a standard academic background, and so I had done some work which suddenly drew an invitation when I was probably in my mid-30s to a conference at Cambridge, but turned up there having no idea what a conference was like. But what was intriguing about that was that because I was of that age and where I was coming from, everybody assumed that I would know the format. And what you... So for all the pain of your first conference and the process, in some ways you are, and we talked about this one, we talked about the norms, you're being inducted into those norms. And for me, the pain was really just parachuting in from the outside, but because of my age and status and race and etc., gender, you know, I was just assumed to know it all. And I'm not going to go through all the blunders that I made, but what, and again, it's a testament in many ways to the unseen role that continual social practice is playing in our lives. We learn all these things without quite realizing we're doing it, and we take it for granted and think they're transparent and other people can understand them. And again, to finally, more confession, I should confess, I still meet this in academia because I didn't come up through academia. So many of my colleagues just have an implicit understanding of... And so many of these I've now come to understand because I've been there. But if something comes up that I haven't experienced in the time that I've been in academia, but everybody assumes that you will have done if you came through the system, I just suddenly fall off the edge of a cliff. So that kind of, that's the sort of learning and training that we don't structure, just as we don't really teach our students how to write or how to read, though that's what they're doing a great deal of the time. Also, we don't really teach them about what it is to be a member of this particular social group. They just learn it by going to things like conferences. So yeah, so I had a lot of pain at my first conference.
You didn't go up through academia either.
I did not, actually. I started 30 years as a naval officer and a practitioner, and then wanted to come back and study more leadership and organizational science and those kind of things, because I'd practiced all those kinds of things. So I have a pretty good sense of what I think works, because I've seen it work. And now I've got a good idea of what the academics say about it, and so some of that stuff. So I had to be very careful because I've had to learn to develop a more open mind to the research and the data collection and those kinds of things. Because in the past I would just say, well, this is what the answer is. This is what you would go do. Because as a practitioner, that's what you're looking for. What's the next step to go do? So it's been kind of an eye-opening experience for me. I personally enjoyed it. I like this approach. I like this idea of, well, let's see what the data says. I like the idea of taking very complex subjects and saying, well, how would you study that? Or what's the way to go research it? Or what data is available? So I really enjoyed that. And I'll tell you, from my first conference was not a whole lot better than yours, actually. So my conference was at the George Washington University, and it's not any fault of George Washington, but the university, but I didn't know what was expected at conferences. And so they said, hey, there's this organizational learning, knowledge and capabilities conference. We're hosting it. So it's this number of days, and I thought, okay, I'll go try and see what that's like. And so I teleported in. I didn't parachute; I used a teleportation device into the doctoral workshop. And I didn't know what was expected. I didn't know you had to write a paper to do that. I didn't know you had colleagues who were analyzing it. So I just showed up, and one of my advisors, I was going to tag along with my advisor, and she says, "No, go over with Bente Elkjær, And she was very nice. And so I watched other people explain what their research was going to be about and what their research question was. And I had none of that stuff because I was a first year student at George Washington. So we didn't pick any of those kind of things. And but I didn't feel particularly embarrassed because I didn't know. But you're absolutely right about this idea, you know, being socialized into a way to be. So there's that aspect of how to be a doctoral student I was being socialized into. And then there was this aspect of how to actually function in the sessions, right? So one of the things I've noticed as a practitioner is everybody always starts out with, I thought it was a very interesting paper. And then they start deconstructing it, or have you considered this? And so there's a whole protocol for how you do that. Whereas in the practitioner field from which I'm, they dispense from all of that. You know, they just say, I don't like this. I think you're wrong there. This isn't the right way to do that kind of stuff. And so I'm not saying one is better or worse than the other. It's just sort of an interesting difference. So the expression that Arduous used for that sort of gentle beginning of criticism was easing in. Right? Mm. So I see a lot of easing in at academic conferences, which is, you know, it's part of that sort of social protocol that you have to follow. But I was curious if you think about unconferencing and these ideas where people are more on an equal level, at least to the extent that's possible by the way these are set up. Mm. You've been to a couple of social events that we've had, certainly for this conference and others.
Oh yeah.
And I wanted to get some reaction from you about, so do you see some analogs or some similarities in the unconferencing and the social events that we do, or is it a little bit less structured? I was wondering if you could expand on that a little bit.
So I mean, social events are a whole subfield of conferencing, yes, almost, aren't they? Particularly when you're dealing with very large conferences like the Academy of Management, where you've got sort of 10,000 to 15,000
yes,
people.
Amazing.
And everyone's sort of going around the various socials.
And you can't find anyone, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You meet people at the reception, then you never see them again.
Right. It's like being at a football stadium socializing. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think there's a whole lot of complex sort of feelings that accompany those events, the social events, of sort of standing there with your tepid glass of white wine and wondering why nobody is rushing to speak to you.
You watch me, apparently.
Or the kind of thing where somebody's talking to you, but they're actually looking over mm-hmm. your shoulder to see what's going on behind them, and if there's somebody more important they might want to speak to. So there's lots of power dynamics. And the idea that somehow the work stops in that space is, I think, very fatuous, really. I think it's a site of power, and there's an awful lot of things that are decided in those spaces. And I think that's really difficult when you're new to conferencing. I suppose that's part of the reason why I started to get interested in this. And I do try to sort of not fall into those patterns. I mean, obviously, I'm now no longer a novice, a newcomer into that sort of culture. But I think you can sort of try to practice a liminality in those spaces and not necessarily, you know, seek out powerful cliques, but actually position yourself on the margins and try to be observant of others and think about the spatial organization of the room and things like that. And I think if we all did that, they might actually be better spaces. But, you know, I guess that's difficult. In terms of unconferencing, whether they're any different, it's hard to say. One of the ones that I attended after the event finished, they went to the pub and had a few drinks in the pub. So you do need these kinds of social lubrications. But one of the things that when Daniel and I wrote our paper, we talked about was the power dynamics of particularly sort of drinking practices and what they can do in terms of sort of exclusion and inclusion. So all of these practices kind of intersect the formal and the informal.
So your advice to someone new to conference, and my experience has been similar, standing alone, would be to just embrace it and go and speak to people and drink
Goodness, if I've given that impression, that's not quite what I intended.
Socially lubricate.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So for our audience, we're having to say that she's not advocating while drinking.
Well, that sort of sounds like, well, what you're saying sounds almost like a logical thing, you know, immerse yourself, network, that kind of approach. But I suppose I advocate a slightly more distanced sort of like insider-outsider tacking, a sort of not trying to immerse yourself so fully, partly because of my skepticism about the effects of some of those practices and the need to be sort of mindful and sensitive about the gender, power, cultural dynamics of them. So I wouldn't say just do that.
I only go to add, because Emma had mentioned Foucamp, that if you think it's quite hard to walk into the room here and suddenly, you know, how do I mix with these people I've never seen before? Imagine, in fact, that as you do that, you're carrying your tent, which you're going to pitch amidst everybody else's tent and spend the night in that tent and join the line at the bathroom and deal with a lot of gender issues going on with 50 tents in one field of people all packed together. And then it throws a whole new light on socializing at conferences.
Have you been to Foucamp?
Yes, I've been in that field. Some of it, I mean, if you think of it more as a festival than as a conference or unconference, it's probably the best way to do it.
Of course, it can be difficult to get out of one's head.
Right.
I think it requires quite a bit of courage to embrace this as a newcomer to, even not necessarily to academia, but to a new conference, to a new field, that to go and admit your lack of knowledge about what's supposed to do. And I certainly did things wrong at the EWS, European Group of Organization Studies conference, where I felt like I was the only one who didn't know that you're supposed to stay in your stream for the entire duration. Really? So I kept walking around and wondering, why is it that people look funny at me every time I enter a new session?
I do like your advice, though, about this, trying to be more aware of what's going on, this insider outsider thing, because that's something I struggle with myself when I go to conferences. I've noticed that the academics tend to be very welcoming. You know, if you come in and say, I'm new to the conference, or you know, here's the stuff I'm doing, and particularly in my work, because I just graduated with my doctorate, and so I don't have any, you know, a lot of research projects going on. So I can talk about my dissertation, and I did that here. And I find the academics, every time I've done that, I've talked about the research I've done or what I'm working on at the time, have been very helpful and talked about, been very inclusive, I've noticed. And I also like that idea of when you're at the social event, kind of looking to see where maybe there's not so many, such a tight knot of people, and where some other people are. I find that a much more satisfying way to kind of engage with people.
Yeah, I mean, I've written a piece with some colleagues where we talk about academic communities and an ethic of care. And I think that that's an interesting way of thinking about our sort of communities of practice and our responsibilities to one another. And if we think about the need to care, then perhaps we interact slightly differently. And the other thing that occurred to me when we were talking about Foucamp and being in a field and having a tent and all these things, a lot of conferences, there's a spatial aspect to them through which we are institutionalized, in Goffman's terms. You know, we're deracinated from our sort of reference points. We may be on the other side of the world, or we may be in a field. We may not have the accoutrements of our sort of identity around us or our families. I mean, for me, when I first started going to academic conferences, I had two small children. So getting to the conference and taking that time was sometimes difficult. And sometimes I would turn up for a day and sort of like shoot off at the end of the day. So, you know, there is this sort of sense in which we are spatially and temporally isolated, which I think is interesting in terms of what that produces, positive and negative.
Yeah, I know, I would agree enormously. I think that, and again, it's something that I think it's great, Emma, that you brought it up, that we too often take space for granted and don't understand how that works, and how the understanding, you know, house space breakdown, you were talking about the concentrated groups and the people on the fringes, and already that's people taking advantage of certain social structures that are reflected in spatial structures and vice versa. And that way in which I think that there's, and you could, it differs from organization to organization, I think, and conference to conference, where some people have that sense of caring and that feeling of obligation to bring people in to look for the, and other conferences that are very different, where those on the outside stay on the outside and no one makes an effort. And that, I think, does reflect the nature, the social structure of, tends to, of the organizing conference, you know, that there are, because there are different institutions, some of which in our world we know are very competitive, and therefore all conversation is edgy, and there are other bits where conversation could be enormously opening and welcoming and people want to share ideas and nobody feels that their ideas are being stolen or appropriated and vice versa. And I think some of the clustering tends to reflect.
As you progress throughout your career, have you noticed a shift in the reasons why you're going to conferences?
Yes and no, I suppose. The essence of it, in a way, is similar. I do find it useful to verbally articulate ideas, and that includes in teaching in the classroom with my students. You know, I see that as a way of developing what I think, and I find the same at conferences, and I always have. So it is a way of you know, getting feedback in a formal sense. You know, people suggest things to you about your work, but it's also your ability to see if you can articulate it in a way that's comprehensible to others, which is one of the best ways to test out thinking. So that's the same. And then there are others, I guess there are other things where I feel increasingly that I do want to play a part in trying to make them good spaces, you know, in whatever way I can. And so if I stop going, then I can't play that role. And I want to play that role because I want it to be a good space for people who are entering the community of academic practice to be in.
So that's a contribution you want to make, right? This contribution to the community and welcoming others.
Yeah. And through doing things like conference organizing or track organizing or being involved with journals, that's the sort of thing.
You've got, I would imagine by this time in your career, lots of colleagues that you've seen kind of regularly at these conferences. Yeah. Do you feel like there's this there's a kind of a good social aspect where it helps you enjoy the work you do? I mean, I get the feedback and the professional aspects of it, but is there...
Well, you mean, you're right. You've known people for a long time when you get to the stage I'm at. So, you know, you can meet someone and you've known them for 10 years.
Right.
So there's definitely an interconnection and a pleasure in meeting and a social aspect to that. And I suppose I've become quite practiced, you know, in contrast to when you start out. I remember being in Helsinki and having a McDonald's burger while sitting on my bed in a room and thinking, this is really not good. Or being in Lancaster at a conference and getting to the pub at the time they stopped serving food and resorting to eating a piece of cake, which I found I'd left in my car. So that doesn't happen to me anymore. I go prepared and I try to meet up with people that I can meet up with or eat alone, but eat well.
Experience is very helpful.
and looking after the body as well as the mind,
sure,
I see as important.
For me, the experience is slightly different, only in that I've tended of late to do much more interdisciplinary work, which tends to mean not only do you have less of a field yourself that you return to with regularity, and also, I should say, it allows you to shun many of the admirable responsibilities that you've taken on for organizing and editing. But it does tend to mean that you end up going each year or more than once a year to conferences you've never been to before. But partly with that question, I think Emma brought up when she began to talk about going to these places on this occasion to see whether what you're saying makes sense when you talk to a discipline that you're not really familiar with. So they become a sort of testing ground. But it does tend to mean that you spend a lot of time, and maybe this is just learning from my first experience, being a neophyte at the conference, not knowing people and not knowing what the norms are.
Do you like being a neophyte?
Well, I think now I've just become used to it in some ways.
Used to being a neophyte.
Right, exactly. Right. A long-term neophyte worked on that. Yeah.
Who was it that said that, how can I know what I'm thinking unless I say it out loud?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's one of Wyke's articles. He says, how can I know what I think until I see what I say, kind of thing. So it's very interesting. Well, I think we're about out of time.
Maybe a question. So do you think conferences are actually well suited towards facilitating knowledge exchange?
Knowledge exchange, I find that a difficult term. It sounds rather transactional. I think they do an awful lot of things.
How very academic of you.
So what would you prefer? What would you prefer to say then?
Well, maybe learning. I would prefer the term learning as somehow broader and less commodifying.
So opportunities for learning then.
Yeah, so do they facilitate opportunities for learning? Sometimes they do. Sometimes the type of learning or the things that they teach you are things that I have issues with and would rather were different. When they work, they work well. We just need to keep tinkering with them to try and make them better.
Well, and I'm a big appreciative inquiry guy, so find what works well and then just try to do more of it, right? Mm-hmm. But maybe to the extent that you don't kill what really works well.
Well, I suppose, I would say a little hesitant about the phrase knowledge exchange, but if we think of something like co-construction of knowledge, then I think the thing that we've really discussed today is that they ought to be. And in some sense, it's our obligation to try to make them such that they are. But again, as I think we've been discussing, it takes work.
It's an agency, right? Yeah.
I really like that you place the responsibility on the attendee rather than on the people who present.
Yes.
And that concludes episode 12, our very first special. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our discussion and that you found great value in our conversation with Paul Dugud and Emma Bell, both of whom have been fantastic and both of whom we thank dearly. If you like our podcast, please share it with your friends, colleagues, and students. And if you get a chance, do leave us a review on iTunes or any other platform you might be listening on. Also, we'd love to hear from you to learn what you think of the direction that the podcast is going. And speaking of which, we announced new episodes for what is now called Season 2 of Talking About Organizations. You can find those on our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. Now, there is no summary for this episode because this is a special episode, but next week we look at a fantastic paper by Donald Roy called Banana Time. I mean, the title itself is just great. And we'll see you then as we discuss labor process and temporality here on Talking About Organizations.